If a train full of Jews.
If a train full of juice.
Juice?
Jinx.
It's a delicious train. What kind of juice?
What flavor?
Also, how old am I in this scenario?
You are a youth.
Youth juice.
A Hitler youth.
Youth juice.
Hello and welcome to
Hang on, guys,
we're going to do this right
totally
this time.
Jumped the gun there.
I feel like we've gotten off track on the harmonizations recently. Let's do this correctly. Wait for my pitch and harmonize with it.
I want to try just as soon as you go for it, we all just pick a note and do it at the same time.
Okay, well, we'll give it a shot this one time.
Okay.
All right.
But if it doesn't work, then that's it.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to
Not bad.
We were actually far
good.
Off.
That was pretty good.
I mean, I adjusted. I think we actually all hit a very similar note to start.
Yeah. It was a little pitchy, but I enjoyed it.
It was a little throaty, a little breathy.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for joining us for another episode of I'm Ryan.
I'm James.
I'm Steven.
I'm Michael.
And this is From Under Rock, the podcast where we watch movies that one or more of us has not seen before in an effort to ray them all and bring us out from under the proverbial rock.
We want to be the very best.
Like no one ever
was. No, I'm not doing this.
To watch them is
I'm
our
not,
real test.
I'm not yes-anding this.
Michael's to rate above them, all of that.
To rate them is our cause.
Oh, sorry, Michael. Mike.
This theme Mr. song Burbs. Like fits really well.
Steven.
What's up?
How have you been? We took a little break.
Just a bit.
But we are back quickly and somewhat efficiently.
Yes.
But you must have something of interest to tell us.
Well, this past Memorial Day, I went home.
For once.
No, I go home all the time. I went home, celebrated my sister's graduation. While I was there, I saw two new movies in theaters. I saw Godzilla, which, James, you were right. I can see why you didn't like it, because I didn't either.
Ooh.
But more importantly, I saw X-Men. And on the way to X-Men, it had just rained a bunch in Texas. And I'm driving with my sisters and a couple friends of ours in this big Suburban that we have.
In a Steuben Suburban?
It was a Steuben Suburban. So
were you driving in the burbs?
I was also in the burbs. Of sin and yeah,
this is amazing.
Your parents did a great job.
This is the best story you've ever told me.
They've been setting this up for like 13, 14 years. Yeah.
Wait, are you 13 years old?
No, since we moved to the Suburban.
Oh, okay.
And got the Suburban.
You moved into the Suburban. Never mind. Let's get back to
that's the story. No, it's not. So it had rained a lot, and outside our neighborhood, there's a little bit of a flood crossing. Didn't used to be there, but it's there now. But you know, we know our Suburban can take it under, you know, moderate rain conditions, which is what we had. So I'm driving, and I'm like, okay, I can't stop, or else then, you know, then it becomes a flooding problem for the car. So I'm just going to keep going. And at the same time, this little like Mini Cooper is driving on the other side of the road where it's more shallow, and for some reason it stops. I don't know why, like right in the middle of the crossing. But I'm like, I can't stop. I just got to keep going. So I push on the gas a little bit more. I go through, and of course, I create a wall of water. And I was like, oh, man, living in California, you don't get to do that too much. And I go through it, and everybody in the car starts laughing. And I was like, what's wrong? Is it because I got, like, really excited about that? Like, you really don't – it's so dry in California when I don't get to do that. And they're like, no, that car's window was wide open. And I looked back, and I was like, oh, man, it is. I just sprayed, like, dirty road water right on this woman on the way
dirty
out.
Road water.
Steven, I didn't know you had it in you.
I still don't feel bad about it.
You were excited, though, right? You had the thrill.
I was like, I have to do this again.
She, like, saw, and, like, for a split second before being splashed with water, just your elated face. Like,
I made eye contact just to let her know that this was coming.
Guys,
okay, so what you should have done is you pretend to be asleep. because if you're driving,
wheel?
Yes, if you're driving and you make a mistake, and then the people see you and they see that you're asleep, they're like, "Oh, that guy's doing a pretty good job."
Yeah,
considering
you live
considering
by
that he is asleep.
Yeah, I forget if you said this just to me or on the podcast.
I don't remember either, but I've done this before. Yeah. I've used this strategy several times.
I'd like to say that it seems appropriate to add to your nickname now. To be Steven Steuben, the Burbs Suburban Zarita, the Jerk.
Just the Jerk.
I just don't get why she, like, she had all this time. She clearly saw me coming. I don't know why her window was wide open when it was, like, when it's been raining pretty much all morning.
Yeah, that is kind of weird,
actually.
I'm still
going to say it's her fault, but
it
was kind of funny.
What a dumb person enjoying the rain and nature.
She wants to enjoy some water. I'll help her out.
There you go.
Boom.
What a jerk.
You're welcome.
What a jerk.
No, you're still a jerk. Michael, how have you been, sir?
I'm good. I got back this past weekend from my brother's wedding, which was in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is where his now wife is from.
Okay, remind me, your brother is
30 years
12?
Old. 12?
Oh, okay, 30 years old.
Were you going to guess 12 years old?
No.
Okay. Yeah, we were in the middle of Knoxville, Tennessee. It was a lot of fun. It was a good ceremony, and on all our tables at the reception, there was like Tennessee homegrown and like mixed jam. There was blackberry jam, there was strawberry jam, and there was an elusive apple butter jam that was only at like a few tables. And I realized most people weren't using their jam, so at the end of the wedding, me and my girlfriend went around and just shoved them into all our pockets and purses. And she had the purse, not me. And
purses, you said. You said plural.
I don't remember that.
He had a man purse. Satchel.
So now I have a whole bunch of jam in my apartment because I looted them for my brother's wedding.
Can you jam? Can you give me some of that jam?
No.
I was going to say, it looks
my
like
jam.
You're in a jam.
No, he's not, because he has...
Because I have
plenty
so
of it, yeah.
He got himself out of a jam.
Yeah.
No, but he's got a lot of it now, so he's got all this jam.
Yeah, he got himself out of a jam.
I got myself out of the jam of having no jam.
That's true.
But now that you have jam all around you...
Question.
It's my jam.
Question. Dude, that is my jam, too. That is totally my jam. Question. Apple butter jam. How do you feel about it?
Haven't tried it yet.
Really?
Still unopened.
I think it's pretty hit or miss, actually.
Really?
Yes.
Well... Good, because I only got one jar of it compared to the others. But if I love it, then I'm going to be sad.
Is it because there wasn't as much, or you were just scared of it?
I literally went from table to table looking for another strawberry jam, because I thought there were only the blackberry and the strawberry. And then when I came upon an apple butter, I was like, no way, there's a third jam here. So I took it.
Maybe that was the most popular one, and everybody used their apple butter jam.
That's entirely possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're missing.
I don't know what I'm missing. I literally don't. I haven't tried it yet.
Well.
But that's the story of how I got out of a jam.
And also, congratulations to your brother, Ryan.
Eh.
No? Don't care as much about that part of the story?
I got jam.
That's cool. The important part.
Yeah.
All right, James. What's going on
here?
It's
nice to know that they have open bars at weddings with jam. Just exclusively jam. nothing too much, but the fun employment is finally over. And, that's pretty exciting. I'm going to have a somewhat stable source of income again, so woo. And then, aside from that, I watched, what did I watch this week? I watched Total Recall in theaters.
The original?
Yeah, the original.
Chick with three boobs.
Yeah, I was like, oh, wow, so that's what everybody's, thank you, that's what everybody's getting all three boobed about in this movie.
No, that is my jam.
Everybody's getting three boobed.
Three boobs are my jam.
Like, wow, you watch that movie, three boobs. And I was like, what are you talking about?
I appreciate you quoting the Ebert review from the 80s.
Yeah, I was hoping nobody would call that on me, but
I think you censored it a little bit, though.
A tad.
That guy.
I was paraphrasing.
He was talking about three tits, and it's like, whoa, you're a professional.
It's like, hey, take it easy, man. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I hadn't seen that movie before. And aside from the three boob chick, the only thing that I knew about it was how Arnold, like, falls down, like, on Mars, falls down a hill and cracks his helmet open. And his eyes start bulging.
Yeah.
And he's like, ah! And I was surprised at how fast that happens in the movie. That's, like, the first thing that happens. I was like,
is it really?
Yeah, in the dream sequence.
Oh, I remember that being closer to the end.
Yeah, that's not really a spoiler since it's the beginning of the movie. So,
well,
Steven,
have you seen the video? There's like, well, I guess there's some DVD commentary for I think it's that movie. I haven't seen it yet, but there is Arnold Schwarzenegger doing commentary on a bunch of his movies, and it's just kind of ridiculous.
I saw the thing where he like fans requested him to just look into a camera and say lines from his old movies. As like,
I literally was showing that to my coworkers today.
Oh yeah,
like not even an hour ago, I sent that video to them.
Nice.
Get to the chopper. Put the cookie
down.
I
like how afterwards he's like, "Thank you very much. If you want me to say more things that I've already said, please."
He kind of gets it. But no, like his commentary is like he'll get to that scene and just be like, "Oh, this is the scene with the three boobed chick." And that's all he has to contribute. Or like for Conan the Barbarian.
The question is, was that a prosthetic or a real boob? A real three.
Well,
three
to quote Arnold Schwarzenegger, who, as we know, was there. That was the scene with the three boob chick.
Well, if you
you do not do a good Arnold.
No, I don't. That turned into the count.
If you put the one boob chick from Kung Pao and the three boob chick, they average out. Yeah.
They make two functional females.
Yeah, exactly.
Because women are only functional if they have two tits.
Apparently. The views of Michael Ornelas do not reflect.
Oh boy,
yeah. Mr. Bourbon, I'm surprised at you.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not.
Well, guys,
segue from that.
So I've been a little behind on my movie watching as of late.
Oh.
So I texted some people this past Saturday and I said, "Okay, I want to see Godzilla, Spider-Man, and X-Men."
Mm. I saw X-Men, actually. I forgot about that.
Amazing.
It was good.
It was good, yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
Don't
pick it yet. It's still new.
So I said, which one of those do you guys want to help me knock out? And they said, let's go see Neighbors instead. So that happened.
So I
saw Neighbors.
I saw that yesterday.
What'd you think?
I liked it. I liked it, actually. I wasn't expecting too much out of it. And I was delightfully surprised that it had me laughing pretty much the whole time.
Yeah, it had good moments, but it was okay.
I actually did like it more than I thought I would, but that's not saying too much still. I kind of feel like this, you know, the modern age of comedy with Seth Rogen improv-ing his way through scenes, like very obviously. I don't know, I just feel kind of gypped.
Like an Apatowian sort of comedy.
It's very self-indulgent to just... film yourself improving, and it's always the same kind of stuff. It's never anything that clever, you know. It's just, I don't mean to sound elitist or anything.
I think we were talking about with what was that movie we watched for Farsgiving?
Sergeant Bilko.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think we're talking about how that's kind of a throwback to an older, very scripted. Yeah. Everyone knows exactly their beats.
I was watching
Anchorman, where it's improvised.
It was Thanksgiving 2.4, by the way.
Ah, yeah, that's right. I was watching the other day the Naked Gun series, and I was just like, man, they just don't make comedies like this anymore.
They really don't.
And it's still so funny. You know, you got Naked Gun, you've got Airplane, pretty much everything with Leslie Nielsen in it.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that I don't appreciate the comedies of today. I think it's more hit or miss. But I would say that, like, you know, like Neighbors, yes, it was a lot of Seth Rogen just kind of being himself, improvising. But there was a lot of, like, I felt like there was more physical comedy in this one than in most comedies that I've seen in the last, like, 3 years or something. And I kind of enjoyed that.
Yeah. And one thing I will say about the kind of improv comedy style of movie that I do like is, in a sense, it does feel a little bit more real, like they're having conversation with their friends. But a lot of the times, my conversations with my friends aren't that funny. So, you know, there's some good in it, but it really needs to deliver as well.
It sometimes just feels like a contest to see who can come up with the most random non sequitur.
Yeah.
I don't know. On the non-movie front, I've been, for the last week, I've been playing a game called Transistor. I know none of these guys had heard of it before. Steven watched me play a little bit of it, though. What did you think?
Who's that voiceover guy who's like, mm-hmm. That's my main experience of it.
Yeah.
He's just sweet.
It's a fairly low on the sound effects. It's very minimalist, and the prominent sound features, you know, I forget things he says.
But he's just
looks like a the narrator. Kid got himself a weapon.
He doesn't do the accent in this one.
Oh, really?
He's just playing more of a straight guy.
But yeah. It is the same voice
actor.
It's the
same actor, yes.
Yeah. So it's
I think he does a much better job because he's more of a character in the world. By the way, I'm talking about their last game, Bastion.
Right.
Supergiant Games made Bastion and Transistor, and both games are narrated by the same voice actor. And
I want that guy's job.
Yeah.
Just narrate games.
I want that guy's voice, to be honest. It's a great voice.
It melts butter. Just the voice. Also heat.
But yeah, I really, really enjoyed the game. It's, of course, in the same vein as Bastion. I don't know if you played it, James.
I played a fair amount of it, but I never beat it.
But it has a much deeper and more interesting combat system, I think. Hmm. And story as well. It's a lot better than Bastion's. Cool. Was, so. And it's gorgeous. It's like the sort of hand-drawn style of Bastion, but in a futuristic steampunk kind of setting. And
Is there spacey things?
It's like, it almost looks like it's set inside a computer. Oh, a lot cool. of times, you know?
I guess that would make sense with the title and everything.
You're fighting these machine-looking things called the Process. Mm. It's a lot of fun.
Process power.
It's a lot of fun. I very much recommend it.
I want to, you mentioned video games. I want to briefly talk about Mario Kart 8.
Oh, I played that last night, actually.
Yeah, I've been playing it. We got it at work today, and that game
It's beautiful.
Is amazing.
It really is.
It might be the best Mario Kart. It's like they have all these great throwback levels to games from all the other consoles, going back to even the Super Nintendo.
They've been doing that for a while.
The Game Boy Advance.
Yeah.
Yes, the Wii U.
Yeah. It's really good.
I still haven't played a Wii U yet.
I hadn't like really played many Mario Karts since 64. I never was too much a fan of them just because I thought Mario Kart 64 was like, you're good. It had all the basics and was like, you know, it did them great. And then this came out and it had all those and then added some a really good dimension. I was never a fan of the two person double dash thing, but
the anti-gravity
that's amazing.
Fantastic.
Like I didn't even realize you're changing dimensions.
How does that change?
Well, like it doesn't really. It
just
like
takes you by surprise.
It's a lot of a spectacle, like because it's very disorienting at first. You're kind of you've got these tracks that sort of warp and go in all these crazy directions, and when that happens, and when you're not, you know, when gravity is like that's not going to work. Your wheels basically switch and
you pull a DeLorean.
You pull a DeLorean, and then you're kind of like going on this new plane. So you can see like the track like that you were on way above you or you know below. It's crazy.
Are you drifting on that new plane?
You're drift. Hold on. You almost caught me there. You almost caught me.
There actually is no drifting, at least not that I figured out.
Wait,
the game.
No, there's absolutely
there?
Drifting.
Yeah, I've been playing
that's
on
how
a
you
Wiimote.
Win, dude. You
like, I switched between the Wiimote and the Wii and the gamepad, so I'm like still like trying to like
right bumper
register where all the controllers are.
Right, is
it right, it's right bumper on the gamepad. I just can't figure out what that button's counterpart is on the Wiimote, which has far less buttons.
I don't know.
You know,
probably B.
Yeah,
maybe.
You know, it goes well with Mario Kart. A nice tall glass of milk.
Yeah.
You guys agree?
And guns.
Not on special occasions, though.
And cocaine.
I think some wine or champagne would be good on a special occasion, though.
Yeah.
Like my first kill.
If I just had breakfast or something like that, yeah, I'll have a glass of milk. Why not?
Yeah. I'm, of course,
speaking
referring
of glasses.
I'm referring to the beverage of choice of Leon in Leon the Professional.
Ah, yes, of course.
Our pick for the week.
So right off the bat, what is the real title of this movie?
I don't know.
That's hard to answer.
Because the title card at the beginning of the movie just says Leon. On IMDb, when I was looking it up somewhere, I just saw The Professional.
Yeah. And on my DVD back home in Texas, it's
this
Leon,
Leon the,
colon,
professional.
The Professional.
Yeah.
It's hard to say.
So I just include it all.
Yeah. I just do the all-encompassing.
Yeah.
But yeah, when Michael introduced it last time. He said The Professional, and I said Leon the Professional because I'd never heard it called anything other than that.
Yeah.
But it is a little confusing.
Well, my introduction to the movie came from looking up top movies on IMDb.
Okay.
So that's where I first saw it referred to in any capacity. Right. So that's what it is to me. Also, I never know if it's Leon or Leon, so I just cut that out. And
Leo.
That's probably what happened when they were actually trying to market the title. The guy kept flip-flopping on Leon and Leon. He just, the Professional. Yeah, that's what we'll call it.
Okay. So, Michael, you just told us why you picked this movie. It was on a IMDb top 100 list, I assume.
Yeah, and it was
something
fairly high up. I think it's
really
top 5 or top 10.
Okay. Of all time?
Really?
Mm-hmm. On IMDb user ratings, yeah. Wow. It's super high. I mean, that's what prompted me to watch it to begin with several years ago. I was a big fan of it. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to rate it top 5 or top 10, but... I love it. I think it's a very interesting movie. It has some very delicate themes to it that it plays with, and I think executes them tactfully, such as the kind of the love between, you know, a full-grown man and a 12-year-old girl. You know, her fixation on him without him making it sexual at all, which I think was very much what was needed. But it is...
It, like... Or Ryan, you can.
Sorry, that's some difficult ground to tread on.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a thin line.
It is
what
very,
I was gonna
very
get
tough.
At.
Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, I think they executed it well.
I agree.
I think the performance by Natalie Portman was spectacular for, you know, how young she was at the time. She was playing older. I think she was like 10 or 11 when they made it.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
I read, and you know, you looked it up on IMDb. I read that it came out in
1994.
Okay, I was like, that can't be right.
So it's been 20 years.
20 years. 94.
No, I think she was playing younger.
Was she?
She was 13.
She was 13? Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
Still.
Not that much younger.
No, it's no longer impressive. But, yeah.
But that was how she got her start, right?
Right.
That was her big break.
Yeah.
What came after that? Do you know?
Probably Star Wars.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was this and then Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Really? I feel like I had...
You would feel like there would be something in between.
Yeah.
I think she was also finishing. Yeah.
She probably
finished high school and then went straight to Phantom Menace.
Huh. Yeah.
And then is it Jean Rousseau?
I think so. He was in Godzilla, one.
He was.
He's the French guy, the French secret agent,
like,
and everything.
Yeah. Is he French or Italian in this?
They call him Italian in this, but the actor is French.
Yeah. He's also played Russian before.
I figure
I believe,
they just cast him as European, you know.
He's mysterious European guy.
Because we can't tell the difference.
Uses about the same accent in every movie. Like, that's a great Italian accent. Oh, his French sounds spot on.
But his Russian is even better.
Jean Reno, not Jean Rousseau. My bad.
Jean Reno. Yeah. Or Reno. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yes, he is French by descent.
Yeah. So, what did you guys think?
I very, very much liked it. I, like you said, the themes of this mismatched Harold and Maude on a smaller scale kind of love was done very well, and I really did enjoy the movie because of that. It was very much the core of my enjoyment of the movie was watching these two people and how they. Reacted to each other and how they grew together.
Yeah.
Over a relatively short span of time, though, it still felt very natural. Mm-hmm. I thought Gary Oldman did his usual kind of crazy, out of his mind bad
character.
Guy. I did too. This is of course much earlier than a lot of his crazy bad guys.
Right.
But
I mean, this is even before The Fifth Element.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
And you can. There's actually very similar tendencies between those characters.
Yeah,
I think.
I almost didn't recognize him because he was so young.
Uh-huh.
And the first scene that he's in,
Gary Young.
I think the first scene is when he breaks into the apartment.
Minus one. Ouch. I had to.
Is the first scene when he just. Jumps in and kills Matilda's whole family.
Yep.
I said it. Yeah, it's... what a way to introduce that character.
And,
you know?
And how crazy he is with, like... He takes that pill, whatever it's supposed to be,
And then he's just talking about all the classical music he's hearing while he's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Something about his, that in particular reminded me of the protagonist from Clockwork Orange. You know, some Ludwig van.
I can see that.
I haven't seen that.
Mm. I've read the book. I haven't seen the movie, actually. Nobody. Wait, you've seen it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Good. You need to pick that.
Okay. But yeah, I don't know if I missed something at the beginning, but I didn't realize that he was a cop until later.
Yeah. That was supposed to be a little twist later on.
That was...
He's a crooked cop.
That was actually a little scary whenever that happened.
Yeah.
Because it was very much a sense of, in that first scene when he's just breaking into this apartment and murdering everybody. And then he actually kind of gets scared, or he appears to anyway, whenever the cops get called.
But then he says, tell them we were doing our job.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And you're kind of like, what? And you still don't know yet.
Yeah.
And then you find out he's a cop, and I remember thinking like, oh man, what do they do now? Yeah. They're kind of helpless against this guy.
It's a way to definitely give power to your antagonist.
I was just thinking that Dread guy, Dreadlocks. Dreadlocks McDreadlocks. It was like, I'm like, who in the force is taking this guy seriously?
I was just looking up the cast, and the actor's name is Willy Oneblood.
Great.
Whoa. Seriously? Yep.
I'd cast him on that name alone.
Yeah. I was just thinking, I was like, him sitting in the DEA's office, I was like, is he under arrest or?
Now keep in mind, it's the early 90s where everyone looked like that.
Everyone.
My mom looked like that in 92.
Everybody just had dreads, except for Leon.
Yeah.
It's because he's French or Italian. One thing I want to talk about Leon in this movie is we have a protagonist and an antagonist who both have similar jobs. They kill people. I mean, when you boil it down, they both kill people in this movie, yet you really root for your good guy. And even though he's killing people, like maybe the very first scene, I think, is him on a hit.
What a way to open.
It was a really fun intro.
Oh, it's so great because you just see how much this guy can do. So that way when you get to that ending scene, you know that this guy can take on just about anything. And he's like super resourceful. He can sneak up on anywhere. He can essentially walk out of a bad situation. Like literally walk out.
I don't know. I was still pretty skeptical whenever they did the whole Blues Brothers thing at the end and 200 cops show up at his apartment and swarm the place. I'm like, there's no way he's shooting his way out of here, right?
He got pretty far.
But he doesn't.
No, that's the thing.
Yeah. He's smart.
But that scene did very much lead me to believe that this was the end of the line, just because.
Yeah.
He totally pulled a Lecter. Those are my actual words when I watched that.
I watched it with James, and he pointed that out, and I was like, damn, he really did. And like that movie had come out within 2 years prior.
I was thinking Inside Job too.
I haven't seen that.
Okay.
Me neither.
Never mind.
Well, to bring it back to the difference between them two is that Leon has these rules that he goes by, and I thought that was really interesting that how that makes him a good guy. You know, no women, no children. He actually, you know, he has these standards where Gary Oldman's character, I mean, kills. How old is the kid that he kills? Like four. I just thought that was interesting. You can have a movie where two guys are killing people, just random people, yet one's a good guy and one's a bad guy, and very clearly set who's good, who's bad. You have no problem rooting for the good guy.
Ryan, you'll probably be the only other person who gets this, but he reminded me a lot of Thane Krios from Mass Effect.
Okay, yeah, he lives by a code.
He lives by a code. He's the weapon, not the murderer. Just putting it out there. All you gamers out there.
Thane was probably my favorite character in Mass Effect 2. He was such a badass.
Totally.
But of course, Leon was something of a badass himself. And like we were talking about that introductory scene, the only thing I could think of was, wow, this guy is a pro, you know, which is obviously what the title points to. But it is good that he is also fighting on the side of good. He's something of a vigilante, even though he's... Yeah. Sorry.
No, you continue your point.
I'm just saying, even though he obviously doesn't have to.
Yeah.
He didn't come to America expecting to do this at all. Uh-huh. And he's a very bitter person. He could very much have turned out to be just a scumbag assassin who kills kids.
I don't think he's that bitter of a person. Because even before that he meets, he's not a bitter person. Because even before he meets Matilda, you get to see him in like these kind of heartwarming situations where he's watching old musicals and he's having a blast.
And his love with his plant.
Yeah.
Like, just taking care of something.
Yeah. His job is kind of just a job. I get the feeling where he doesn't really ask anything about who he's killing. He just, okay, I'll kill that guy. Don't tell me if he has a family. Don't tell me what it's for. Just give me a name, give me a location and a time. All right. There's the money.
He fills the role of the gentle giant very well, yes.
Ryan, I'm going to give you 2 points just because I've liked all the points you brought up so far.
Thanks, man.
Steven, I'm going to give you a point as well. James, you're still at -1 for making Gary young man.
Awesome. Totally worth it.
Going off of kind of the gentleness of his character, this movie... It was definitely an intense movie, and they managed to infuse a lot of good, lighthearted moments. The earliest one, you know, right after Matilda found out her family had been killed, and she's like hanging out in Leon's place, and he gets a little piggy, and you can tell he has no real idea how to handle kids or what age range would find a certain thing entertaining, but the fact that he's trying is so charming to his character,
He's trying. It's great for him, but I was like, I kind of had a problem with some scenes like that because sometimes it like the backdrop is her family. This, how many days does this movie take place in? Probably less than a week. You know,
I would say more than a week.
Because I mean, they do the montage of like all the hits.
That's true.
I would say a few weeks.
I would say the training. Like a month.
She gets to a point where she's fairly competent anyway.
That happens so early on, and it's kind of like her family just died minutes ago. And she's kind of laughing. I thought that was kind of a fast switch.
But they also showed the relationship she had and her role in her family to where her brother is the only one she grieved about.
Yeah.
But like,
she couldn't care less about her family because they were pretty shitty to her.
She still knows her brother died, though. That's what I'm getting at. It seemed like a fast switch. But I mean, you're right. You're absolutely right about like, it makes Leon seem like the good guy. Like, he's trying.
And I'll also point out the fact that maybe part of the reason that there's, less exhibited emotion on her behalf is the fact that the brother is killed off screen because they don't want to show a kid being killed. So I think maybe it's part of the whole out of sight, out of mind. The audience didn't see it, so she doesn't have to react as strongly to it. I don't necessarily agree that that's the way it should be, but maybe that's the
excuse. Maybe.
So.
Yeah, that's one of those open door interpretation things. Yeah, I buy that.
Well, I'm not selling it.
I'd buy that for $1.
All right. I'll take that.
I'd like to hear what all of you guys' favorite parts was. I think now that I have some distance behind it, my favorite would probably have to be the scene where Gary Oldman and his crew is still inside Matilda's apartment and she comes back with the groceries and she's standing outside Leon's door pleading with him to open the door. Yeah. That was just... absolutely heartbreaking for me.
That's her best moment in the film, I think. For me, I just love how precise and machine-like Leon is. My favorite moment is when the SWAT team is up in the new apartment building or hotel or whatever that was. They do the fake knock, open the door.
Yeah, the
he closes
wrong
knock. It, and then just all hell breaks loose. And then you see what he's done. I like to imagine that in like the 5 seconds between that knock, the wrong knock, he had like sprung into action, jumps up silently to the ceiling, and he's probably done this like a million times.
Now, Steven, I know for a fact the three of us watched the extended version. I think you did too, because did it play up the relationship between Matilda? Did it get like uncomfortable to you? Because I know that there's
was that cut out?
There's an Americanized version. So the extended version is the real version, and then the truncated version is the American release, which kind of took away some of the sexual tension between Matilda and Leon.
Hmm. I think I might have watched the truncated version. The one I saw was 1 hour and 49 minutes.
Oh, okay. The one we watched was 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Okay, yeah. So I'm missing. Okay, well, I guess I'll get it out of the way now just to kind of dismiss it. I was going to say that I felt that relationship was very underplayed because Ryan made a joke about the movie talking about like, oh, the 12-year-old has a crush on however old that guy is. And I went, oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. I think I have seen the longer version. I have it on DVD back home. But in this, I was like, they bring it up like 3 times. And then
Oh no, it's very prominent. Yeah. I think in the extended one,
it's like.
I mean, you know, that's pretty much what the extra 20 minutes goes to.
Yeah, I figured, because in the shorter version, it's kind of like, oh, every 12-year-old girl probably has a crush on some like 30-something-year-old guy in Hollywood. Well, this isn't too different than that.
Did they have the scene of them celebrating her first kill, drinking champagne, her getting really giggly and trying to kiss him across the table?
No, I do remember that in the old when I watched it on DVD, which I was kind of like, I want to say, it was one of those things, I hadn't seen the DVD in like 10 years, so I was like, I want to say there was a scene where this happened.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Specifically that, like I want to say she tries to kiss him.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
So what I was going to say is, it's funny that you say that your favorite scene was the one in the apartment, because to me that's the climax of the truncated version, because it is a lot more centered on the action as opposed to the character.
Yeah.
Which I found interesting. My favorite scene that wasn't mentioned, because I actually love both the scenes that you guys did mention, is when she's practicing shooting people with paint.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I love that. Yeah. The jogger was great. Yeah. And then I love the one where they go into the apartment. And you know, right before she burns all the, I think it was heroin, and
again,
she,
cut
she's
out
like
of the,
a little to the left,
yeah,
and like the dude's just like freaking out over this,
he's like, oh man, what the hell, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah, and,
yeah,
yeah. That was a great scene.
Yeah,
my favorite part was probably, and I mean now, like just rounding them out, I'm just like, wow, there are a lot of really fantastic scenes in this movie. One of my favorites was. When she kind of goes solo and tries to get Gary Oldman, and she goes into the restroom and he's like behind the door and he just silently shuts it. That whole thing was fantastic, because he's like having this whole speech and he's kind of moseying about through the restroom, washing his hands, drying his hands, kind of making his way closer and being more and more of a threat.
Especially once he takes that pill, you're just like, oh, like what
he's
is he?
So villainly.
Yeah, it was like, great.
Yeah,
and I love when he turns his head and you just hear the.
And I love the line in that scene where he's like, "Do you value life? Because I would hate to take it from someone who doesn't value it." It's a great. Bad guy line.
I feel like that this, on a sort of human level, this movie just hits the nail on the head, and like especially with, we were talking about the relationship between Leon and Matilda. Sometimes I feel like dramatically it was like, I don't know if I could see this actually happening, but like it was really powerful in a lot of scenes. Like I feel like the interplay between the characters, what was the true strong suit of the movie. Yeah. Not to diminish the dramatic part of it either. Right. But I'm just saying.
Well, and I love seeing the ways that, I mean, he definitely loves her. Obviously, not in a physical way, but the positive impact she has on his life. Because before, he's literally, you know, you see him go to that movie by himself, and that seems about like the only thing that has brought him.
Yeah.
That isn't mundane in his day. You know, he just kind of just sits there, does his push-ups, works on his abs so he can swing down and shoot people when they're knocking on the door.
I know.
And he nurtures a plant, and then he gets something a little bit bigger to nurture in a human who has had her parents killed. And the dress-up game that they did was kind of a turning point to me for his character.
Definitely.
And I love her reaction to not knowing who it was. She's like, oh, no, it was good, as he kind of like walks away defeated. But like, he's having fun now. And I don't know. I love his character growth relative to her.
Yeah.
He shows having fun in a very different way, though. To me, it looked like at first he wasn't enjoying the game.
Uh-huh.
But of course, then he actually goes and dresses up. And I'm like, oh, he's totally into this, you know, and
I love his John Wayne pilgrim,
and then he's like, oh, she didn't get that. Here, let me lean against the doorway. Right. That'll give it away.
No, he's always leaning. He's in his movies.
Yeah.
So he's doing the hip out sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me get on a horse and unrealistically shoot something from it. That'll show her.
Yeah.
Pilgrim.
Yeah. So.
Did you already say your favorite?
I did.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Because I wanted to move on. I just didn't want to stomp all over your opinions.
Please.
I hate to do that.
Please.
Okay. Stop, I wanted to also talk about the movie's music. Michael, you and I kind of talked about it briefly when we watched it together, and it was definitely an interesting score. I really enjoyed it because it felt very worldly and very ethnic for most of it. But there were also, Michael, you made the point that there are a lot of themes that were recurring for both characters, for all characters, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought it was like, sometimes I was like kind of taken out of the film. I was just like thinking about, why did they decide to go with this sort of sound? But at the same time, I couldn't think of anything else being there, you know?
Yeah.
I think I agree with you with one part in particular, and that is the very end of the movie. Whenever she plants the plant and the song starts up. I thought the music at first was very appropriate.
And then there's Sting.
But then...
I think that was Sting.
Was it really?
Yeah, okay, I think so.
I very much think they could have done without the vocals.
Yeah.
Because that song was fine, but
it was a strange,
I felt like the vocals really did not fit.
Yeah.
Well, they got the rights.
She's like, what?
We're putting it in this movie.
It costs a lot of money. We might as well.
Yeah.
It would have been worse if it was somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask one more opinion of you guys. The scene where, I mean, it's very underplayed. All it does is get them kicked out of an apartment, but it has very severe ramifications 20 years later if this same thing were to happen, where she's at the apartment and says to the manager, he's not my father, he's my lover.
Yeah, and then there's that shock look, and it's two scenes later.
That's
Mr. MacGuffin. I love that. That's his name, his fake name, Mr. MacGuffin.
And my take on that, or my only thought about it, is that's the only... Her character seems so much more grown up to where she would know better than to do something like that, but I think her feelings for him were getting in the way, and she wanted to live in this fantasy of being able to admit to people we're in love.
Yeah,
but it seemed out of character because
I agree.
They're so careful.
Yeah. She jumps between being mature and sort of like streetwise, because I mean she's seen a lot even before her family. Like her father beats her, and she smokes cigarettes, and she skips school.
You know, father beating girls. That's how they're adults. That's how they show they're mature.
No, but and then you know she acts like whimsical and like 3-4 years younger in other scenes, and that brings me to, and I know y'all agree with, will disagree with me probably, and maybe it's because I saw the shorter version, but I wasn't too impressed with her acting outside of scenes like knocking on the door, waiting for Leon to open up, and maybe that's because this is it looks like a lower budget movie, and the other Natalie Portman low budget movie I compare this to is...
Don't say Star Wars.
I knew someone would. No, Black
Ryan, I'm gonna
Swan.
Give you a point for that.
Do what?
Black Swan. Like her acting is off the charts over there, and here I'm kind of like, okay, she's kind of sad, and in the scene after, and
she
goes
will.
Back and forth. I can't tell if that's the writing making her go back and forth, or she doesn't know where to have her emotions.
I'm gonna go out and say I think it's because it's the truncated version, because a lot of the heavy acting on her end comes from developing the relationship with Leon.
And again, it was one of those things where I'd seen it's been like 10 years and it was 4 in the morning, I don't even remember, but I was like, I want to say her acting was better last time, and I couldn't tell us because I was much younger. But in just what I got, it's kind of like Godzilla, the edited version. It takes away a lot, because the shorter version, I'm sure if y'all saw it, y'all would think, oh, she's kind of just ping-ponging back and forth within a scene. It's not very justified at all.
Ratings?
Anyone have any more thoughts?
Ratings?
I'm down for some ratings.
Ratings.
I don't think we do that anymore.
I guess
not. I don't think we ever did that.
Did we?
I just wanted to announce it.
We do it with the challenge, but let's not jump into that yet. No. All right.
Challenge having sex.
No, that comes
sorry,
later.
This later. I'm sorry. Who shall start with the rating of?
I'll
Leon
go just because mine is kind of different since I saw a somewhat different version, but I'll try to adjust.
Okay.
The thing I saw, I would give maybe like something like a B or B minus. But again, I'm missing about 20 minutes of movie, which is a lot. Just going off of my memories of when I originally saw the movie and y'all jogging those memories back of the better acting and the more developed story, I would give this movie a B plus.
Okay.
I'll go. Like I said, the scenes were, pretty much every scene was constructed so well. Like, it just, everything kind of fit together, and I felt that the scenes kind of, they didn't stick around for too long. You know, they kept moving, but they kept being engaging, and I was, like, really kind of on the edge of my seat to see where they would go. And especially, you know, us going over our favorite parts of the movie, I was like, man, there really were a lot of fantastic scenes in this. Aside from that, I don't know. I thought that the acting was fantastic, especially on Natalie Portman's part, for the fact, you know, she was like 13 at the time. And I thought that it was really well shot too. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna go ahead and give this one an A minus.
Okay.
I am going to echo James's A-. Yes.
A-, 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 A-.
And I am going to echo my own rating. An A-.
A-.
So, as I'm sure y'all can guess,
the total will be an
A-.
Somewhere in there was like a B plus, like at the very end of that echo. Like, you didn't really hear it, but you think about it later.
Guys, did you hear that?
No, it was an A minus, man. Don't worry about it.
No, I could have sworn that was
a
B plus.
No, man. It's fine.
I'm freaking out here, man.
Just calm down.
All right, guys. Well, I think it's time to move on to the
challenge.
Michael, would you like to remind us of where the points stand?
Right now we have Jooms McDoodles at -1. You know what? I'm going to take another one away. Gary Youngman.
Yep. Totally worth it. Still worth it. Yep.
I don't think there's ever been a joke so bad that it got you a deduction and then
a subsequent deduction
just for me thinking about it.
How many points would you be willing to deduct? For Gary Youngman? Yes.
I would go down the full 3.
Oh my
honestly.
God. All right, I'm going to go down another full 3. You're at -5.
Let's see if I can win it back. Don't call it a comeback.
Well, we all know that the real points await in the challenge.
We already did that. Michael already went super. He's now Super Saiyan 2.
Challenge having sex. Having sex.
Steven has 1 point. Ryan has 3. So our challenge this week, I had all of you pick a character that survived this movie. And I want you, now that it's 20 years later, to pitch a spin-off sequel that focuses on that character, what they're doing in their life. It does not have to tonally match this movie at all. It can be a buddy cop comedy starring
the plant.
Don't spoil mine.
The ghost of dreadlock guy. I guess that wouldn't be a surviving character, but I didn't want to say one that any of you would have.
Ghosts survive.
And I'm going to go on record and say none of you picked what I wanted you to pick, and that
was
would
it
be
the plant.
The plant.
I was this close to, but when I saw the prompt for the challenge, I was like, oh, you know what? My uncle and I kind of like had a conversation when I first saw this movie, and it was essentially this challenge. So I'm going to go with what we talked about 10 years ago.
I'm just going to say, had any of you done a Pixar movie starring the plant, you would have gotten an automatic 100,000 points.
I was so... What if I had just picked the plant? Because I was so close. So close.
Well, you didn't.
So I'll never know the what if.
Mm-mm. You'll never know. No. Okay. So who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
All right. Steven, who chose Matilda.
The obvious choice.
10 years in the waiting, this pitch.
With a couple twists. Sorry. All right, guys. So I'm doing a double spinoff here. We've seen Natalie Portman in 2.
You're doing like a Marvel superhero universe based on Leon the Professional?
No. I'm doing more of an X-Men.
I am going to say that if you tie it into Star Wars.
Don't worry.
There will be heavy subtractions.
No, I'm doing like a Days of Future Past where I'm taking 2 different franchises and merging them. They're not really different
franchises. They're the same franchise.
time periods, whatever. So Matilda, played by Natalie Portman, 20 years later, is in dance school, and she just really, really wants to be the lead in Black Swan.
She's in dance school when she's 33.
What's her name was in Black Swan? What's her name from Star Trek? Why is that the only thing I remember?
We are poking some holes in your story fast, Steven. All right. You better write this ship.
Well, it is weird that she's 33 and in dance school because there's no one who's actually going to give her the part. There's far more qualified, far younger dancers ahead of her.
This became so sad. Okay, she's so fast.
Okay, she's holding on to the dream. I'm back on board.
So there's no way she's going to get this, no matter how much she practices. And the only thing she can do is go back to cleaning, as Leon once taught her. Ooh. She's not cleaning for money. As we know, Leon left her plenty of money that she can get at any time she wants. She's cleaning for herself. She's picking off these other dancers one by one until she is the only one left to play the lead in Black Swan. But while she's off trying to kill Mila Kunis for some reason, I don't want to completely spoil the other movie. if you haven't seen Black Swan, go see that movie.
Haven't.
She gets caught by the authorities because, you know, it's pretty easy to follow the trail. There's a trend in all these dancers being killed. So
are they corrupt?
Yeah. No, actually, no. They're just cops.
Does she fake her own death?
Mila Kunis or...
No, does Matilda fake her own death to throw the cops off her scent?
No. She goes back...
You could have gotten so many points, and you just threw them all away.
I'm sticking to my story here.
This isn't a yes-and thing.
Matilda can't...
I'm the studio exec here to approve your script.
Well, you know what, Mr. Studio exec? I'm just going to give you a story that I'm passionate about.
I don't like it.
Exactly.
I don't like passion.
That's the state of Hollywood.
You're doing a great job of being an executive producer.
So she's got to get back to her roots. Where are her roots? Well, she planted that plant back at her old school. So she's going to lead the cops on a chase back to her old school where she knows this place like the back of her hand. So she gets to her old school. It's like 3 a.m. There's a shootout. She takes a hit to the shoulder. She goes in. She runs into one of the buildings, and she runs into the old principal that took her in 20 years ago. And her principal asks, "What are you doing here?" Sees that she's shot, says, "I need to help you out. Is there anything I can do?" And Tilda tells her, "I need you to go out and distract the cops." She goes, "Don't lie to me. I know that's not what you wanted me to do. I'll help you, but you can't lie to me anymore, Matilda." She goes, "You're right. I'm going to use you as a human shield." So she takes her, uses her as a human shield.
I thought we were about to get a lesbian sex scene with Mila Kunis and Natalie Portman. And
I would have also wanted some points.
And this really old woman is now just getting shot up by the cops, who for some reason are like, "I kind of see her. That doesn't look like her. Maybe it's raining like that one time 20 years ago with the sprinklers, but we're going to keep shooting her."
The cops are like, "Is it raining right now?"
So she leads them over to the plant, which in 20 years has now grown into like a gigantic garden jungle. The cops follow her in, and they're just getting like hung by these vines left and right. This is actually the part I talked about 10 years ago with my uncle. I was like, the plant's got to be huge. So she, like, the plant listens to her. She like controls the plant.
She's the plant whisperer.
She's like, "Plant, get him." So the cops are like, "Rah!" And then like, it's just like hanging the cops one by one. And by the end of the movie, we have Matilda dressed up as the Black Swan right underneath the plant with a bunch of decapitated and hanging policemen around her, hanging by the vines.
Does she get the part?
I don't know what you just described, how that's a movie.
Hold on. No, how did she get the part?
Yeah, no, because she's wearing the dress.
Hold on. I don't know what the hell just happened.
Inside the plant was the playwright.
You're being evaluated.
Then, hold on, no. And then the fairies from Fern Gully come and help, right?
Sure, yes.
We've all seen Fern Gully, right?
It's been 15 years. Maybe, no, I've seen it later than that.
Michael's just got this distraught look on his face. Just look like all the hope.
Just picturing how Act 1 looks of that movie and how Act 3 looks of that movie and what the hell must happen in Act 2 for those two things to connect and be the same. No, don't. You are done.
No, there's 20 minutes in the extended version. But we'll clear Michael, the whole thing up.
He did also tell the story of the plant 20 years later, so...
And that was what...
You guys aren't letting me finish, and I'm getting extremely frustrated.
That's what my uncle... That's what I talked about.
I don't know who would pay to see this movie, but I know I would pay to see this movie. Yes. I'm going to give you 8 points.
All wow. right. It's actually quite generous.
To my uncle, thank you for showing me this movie 10 years ago. I knew it would pay off.
By the way, it's out of 10.
Okay. Wow.
So
I'm really
there's
happy
no way James can win unless he can unless he can charm the pants off of me, get
you
5 points,
I can.
And then pitch a perfect set. But he doesn't have a $1 million arm like John Hamm, so I don't think he can. Who wants to go next?
I'll go
for it. And Ryan picked Tony.
Tony, the
pasta guy.
The benefactor of Leon and the contractor of Leon as well. So Tony becomes the caretaker to this trust fund for Matilda. And she trusts him and he holds on to her money. And he helps her to use it wisely. And as more money comes in, he gradually begins to build her account a little bit, and everything's going fine. One day, a customer comes into his restaurant and says, "This meal is bullshit. It doesn't taste good. In fact, it tastes bad. And I would like my money back, please." And Tony says, "You know, of course you can have your money back now, but." but you can also you can leave your money with me, and of course it's your money and you can have it whenever you want, but you know I'll take care of it for you if you want, and it's better than a bank. You know, the bank's just gonna rip you off. And so the customer agrees. Okay,
old Tony won't rip you off.
Yeah.
And then you know this an old friend of Tony's comes to see him one day, and he says, "Hey, Tony, remember when we went to the movies a few years ago, and you know, you owe me $12 from that man?" And Tony says, "You know what? You're absolutely right. And this $12, it belongs to you. It's yours, but you know, I can hold on to it for you if you want. And you know, it's better than a bank, and I can take care of it for you, and I'm not going to rip you off like a bank will." And the friend agrees. Okay, you can hold on to my $12. And so Tony, you know, his little business begins to grow, and eventually it becomes too much for him to keep track of all in his head. And so he starts to keep a little ledger, but it keeps growing and growing. And eventually he's like, you know, I don't have to have this restaurant anymore. I need to get a little office space for myself. And so he buys some office space and opens up the First National Bank of Tony. And his motto is, of course, it's better than a bank. It's not a bank. It's better than a bank.
But it's a bank.
Yes.
That pays back no interest on anybody's savings.
Absolutely not.
but you can have your money
and
whenever
you're not allowed. Yeah. You know, he strongly discourages you from ever withdrawing.
Now, question: is this a drama or a comedy?
It's like a dramedy. You know.
Is there a love interest?
Yeah, but that's not what it's about.
Is it about respect for women?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
He's got nothing but that.
Is it the story of a man with dementia who doesn't know what things mean?
You know, if you choose to interpret it that way, then that's fine.
All right, I'm on the cusp about this one. I need you to give away the ending.
Tony dies.
Perfect.
That's the end.
Tragic hero.
Via.
Overpromising.
This man is overpromised. I'm afraid. I'm afraid there is very little time left.
You managed to make something dumber than Steven's. I don't even know. I'm literally between a 6 and a 7, which is either a tie or you beating Steven. I'm going to take some time to mull it over while James
while James pitches his.
All right. Your wish is my command. Okay. So.
Hey. Stop saying okay.
Okay. Stop saying okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. All right. So, shortly after the film's completion, we know that Matilda goes back to the girls' school, and we know that the headmaster, that she has relayed the truth to this headmaster about her. Like, he's like, stop lying to me. He's like, okay, you want the truth? You got the truth. This is exactly what happens. I helped this guy clean for like a month or something like that. He's dead. I got nowhere to go. Help me out. The headmaster's like, get the hell out of here. But wait. She leaves. The headmaster, who I forget her name, but it doesn't matter.
Who's the main character of this movie?
She's just known as the headmaster for right now, but it doesn't matter because it's a cover. Matilda leaves the office, right? She kind of sits there, ponders in her plush leather chair.
I like your detail. I'm giving you a bonus
point. All right. She's sitting there.
And
she's
I'm
like,
going to call it a comeback if you win.
Good. Don't good, she says. Don't call him. I found my mole. She knows that that Matilda could work for Tony, would know Tony. What Matilda doesn't know about the headmaster, mistress, whatever, is that she is a rival. It's not important. She is a rival mob boss. Uh-huh. Now I got you. See, the rival mob boss, she's been running a game on the underground scene for quite some time, but not nearly to the level of Tony and his bank. she knew that she needed somebody on the inside. So what does she do? She says, Matilda, I'm really glad that you told me the truth about you know what you did, and I'm willing to help you out. So I'm going to hold on to your money. And you can get it whenever you want, by the way.
that sounds
vaguely familiar.
Than
a bank, obviously. But Matilda, working under the headmistress, whose real name, by the way, is Fanny Bon Hammerswitch. And she...
Awful name.
Yes.
I like the Bon part.
I'm going back. I'm taking that point back.
Okay. Working with Matilda, she is able to take down Tony. In fact, she becomes the underground queen of narcotics and organized crime.
Is that a David Bowie song, Underground Queen?
Underground Queen. I'm fairly certain it is. In fact,
it's about Freddie
I think
Mercury
we need to get the rights for that song, to Mister. We could also get a Sting song in there, you know, in keeping with the end of the first movie.
Is that it?
Yeah. And Matilda becomes her number one hitman.
Okay. 0 points.
Okay.
I have no interest in seeing that movie. I was hoping that when you picked the headmaster, it would be about a woman who's just really good at blowjobs. But it didn't go that way.
Also, it doesn't take place 20 years later.
Also, it didn't really take place 20 years later. Also, I'm realizing Ryan is the only one who did a total spinoff that didn't bring in other characters from the movie, which I actually did not want. I wanted
just one?
Just the spinoff character to do their own thing, like Joey after Friends. Because that was how you do a spinoff.
I didn't understand the prompt, and... I would like to
you didn't
retake
follow
the test.
Directions, James.
So having said that, I'm gonna award Ryan 7 points.
And I so close. So close.
It's the closest you've come to winning one of mine.
Yeah, it's so almost a back to back.
I just want to throw out a little statistics here. Steven and I have never gone first or second in the cycle. We have always gone third and fourth.
Huh.
We could be breaking.
Is that true?
Ground.
Yes. Absolutely true.
I went third last cycle, so that's impossible.
Maybe that's not true. I'm pretty sure.
Should I subtract a point for your.
I'm pretty sure at least Steven has never gone second, though.
I'm sad I didn't get a point for pointing out the stop saying okay. I saw that part in the movie.
You didn't get a point because I could tell that was a grab for points.
No, I know. The thing is, I was listening like really hard for someone to just say okay twice the entire podcast. I was like, I'm gonna pull that
trying
line
to snipe
out.
Points.
Never happened. Y'all are too smart.
Okay.
I'm done.
Okay. Final points, Michael.
James at -5.
It was still worth
Gary,
it. It was
young
still
man,
worth it.
I'm -6.
No. Take it down to -10 for all
I
care.
What to do.
All right. Do I get plus points because I'm telling you what to do?
Yeah.
What's the?
I'm giving you 17 points. And I'll win.
Who's the character of the Breakfast Club who keeps
Did
talking back and getting more and more detentions?
Oh yeah. Well, I'm free next Thursday. After that, I'm gonna have to check my calendar.
Good.
Because it's gonna be filled.
Classic.
All right, I didn't really give you 17 points, James. I'm gonna take away another one for Gary Young Man.
Okay.
I hated that.
That's totally
-7
fine. It's still worth it.
To Steven's 9, to Ryan's double digits 10.
So close,
Ryan. What's our pick?
Our pick for next week is Coffee and Cigarettes. Has anyone seen it?
I saw a bit of it
really?
When we were living with some man back at the Oakwoods. Yeah.
Okay.
Bill Murray.
It's a Bill Murray movie?
Sort of.
Bill Murray's in the movie?
Yes.
Nice. I've never heard of it.
Okay.
But I've seen it. I'm kidding. I haven't seen it.
You got me.
I've seen Coffee and I have seen Cigarettes.
I enjoy Coffee all of the time. Cigarettes occasionally, you know, if I'm in the mood after sex, you know.
You don't have sex.
That's true. I don't.
Guys, please check out the Jim Jarmusch cult classic Coffee and Cigarettes.
Comedy, drama, murder?
It's kind of a dramedy. It's kind of a dramedy.
It's a pretty unique.
Yes.
Cool.
That most of our crew hasn't seen. Steven has only seen probably one part of it.
I'd seen like three.
Okay.
Three bits.
Gotcha.
Three.
Oh, is it like
I won't
chunks?
Say anything
is it divided into bits?
It's, yes.
Huh.
It is a...
Anthology?
Yes.
Vignettes?
An anthology of sorts. Oh. That's a good way of putting it.
So it's like Valentine's Day, the greatest anthology movie
of
all time.
Or New Year's Eve starring Bon Jovi.
Well.
Sweet.
Yes, exactly like that, actually. And write us in with your thoughts, fuarock@gmail.com, or tweet us at fuarockpodcast.
Cool.
And join in on the discussion, please. Steven?
What do we do now?
That's me. We're about to find out.
Steven? What's going on the Hyperdrive Pictures front?
We have been releasing tons of videos. By the time you're listening to it, the last video we did was a Pokemon video, which I'm about to start editing pretty much right after we wrap up here. And also, possibly some vlogs from Long Beach Comic Expo, because I'm going to that tomorrow. Hopefully, I think y'all said y'all can't go, but
correct.
If y'all change your minds, it's pretty cool. I might. Someone asked me to do a review video of Godzilla on Hyperdrive. I was going to do it on my own channel, but just I mentioned I didn't like it, and I kind of want to get my thoughts out there because it's kind of like we got two Godzilla movies that missed the mark when it's pretty easy to do. The Japanese have done like 28 of them,
but I wouldn't argue those all hit the mark.
I know, but like they get a very crucial thing right. That this movie gets
don't
wrong.
Tell me because I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
And I want to.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna love it when I love that movie.
Oh, I could see you. Maybe.
No, what?
I'm
maybe
right
not.
Here.
You can't see me.
You can. No, that one's
Wait,
over. No
we,
more
do
points.
Do we get more points for that?
You know what, Steven, I'm gonna give you points for your okay, but I'm still gonna give Ryan points for you can't see me.
I'm fine with that.
But I'm only giving you 0.9 points because I don't want you to hit double digits.
Oh man.
Even though a decimal technically is an
brutal.
Extra digit.
All right, very exciting stuff. I think that's going to do it.
Hold on. Gary Young Man. Minus.
How many?
Another one. You're at -8 now.
Okay.
Are you okay with this, James?
Still worth it.
100% okay with it.
Absolutely. I think that joke is golden.
You think you've made good decisions in life.
And I also hate you now.
Still worth it?
I think that'll be nice. Nice tension for next one.
Oh.
Good dynamics.
Tune in next week.
Tune
it's like,
in next
well,
week.
Here's what I thought of the movie. Fuck you, James.
Next week on From Under. Next week on From Under a Rock. Give us a preview, guys.
Guys, put the guns away. So, Michael, the choice is yours. Who is going to die?
Go fuck yourself.
Okay, so Ryan.
No. Point that gun at yourself.
Oh, I see. Wait, no, I'm not gonna fall for that one. You bitch.
You shot me?
Yes. Yes, I did.
He used a silencer.
That was
cut to black on the gunshot. next week on From Under a Rock.
You killed him!
Wait, no, don't.
Oh, you totally gave it away.
I also don't think I should be the one to provide that voice.
You killed him!
And it's me I'm talking about. This is just
Let's go around the table for one final roll call.
I'm Jooms McDoodles.
I'm Steven Steuben, Suburban the Burbs, Zarita the Jerk.
Well, you got it wrong anyways, so you can now add the asshole at the end of
the Jerk. The asshole.
Two. A new beginning.
The third.
I'm the man, the myth, the legend, Mike Bourbon. Self-appointed.
I'm the as-yet-nicknameless Ryan. Join us again next week for another episode of
From Under a Rock.